Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Crowe's Jill Kismet.
My Lord God, do not forsake me when I face Hell's legions. In thy name and with thy blessing, I go forth to cleanse the night.
Book 3. Redemption Alley. Narrated by Julianne Elliott. With performances by Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Gregory Gorton, Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Yasmin Twazam, Ken Jackson, Elizabeth Jernigan, Stephen Carpenter, Thomas Keegan, Danny Gavigan, Kimberly Gilbert, Joseph Thornhill, Patrick Bussink, Eric Messner, Allison Thomas, Nanette Savard, Alyssa Wilmoth, Christopher Graybill, and Mort Shelby.
Right before dawn, a hush falls over Santa Luz. The things that live and prey in the night are either searching for a burrow to spend the day in, or looking for one last little snack. Predators get desperate as the sun, that great enemy of all darkness, walks closer to the rim of dawn. Which explains why I was flat on my back, again, with Hellbreed's strong fingers cutting off my air and my head ringing like someone had set off dynamite inside it.
The closer to dawn, the harder the fight.
Sparks spat from silver charms tied in my hair, blessed moon metal reacting to something inimical. The traitor squeezed, fingers sinking into my throat, and the flat shine of the dusted lying over his eyes as they narrowed, a forked tongue flickering past the broken yellow stubs of his teeth.
Apparently, dental work wasn't part of the contract he made with whatever Hellbreed gave him supernatural strength, as well as the ability to set shit on fire at 1,000 paces.
I brought my knee up, hard. The bony part of my knee sank into his crotch, meeting precious little resistance.
That didn't sound like much fun. The Hellbreed didn't give him an athletic cup either.
The traitor's eyes rolled up, and he immediately let go of my trachea. I added injury to insult by clocking him on the side of the head with a knife hilt. I didn't slip the knife between his ribs because I wanted to bring him in for questioning.
What can I say? Maybe I'm in a good mood. Besides, I have other worries. But one, this burning warehouse.
Smoke roiled thick in the choking air, almost obscuring the girl handcuffed to a support post. I gained my feet with a convulsive lurch, eyes streaming, wrenched his hands away from his genitals and behind his back, and clapped the silver-plated cuffs on the traitor's skinny wrist. I would have told him he was under arrest, but I didn't have the breath. I scooped up the handle of my bullwhip and vaulted a stack of wooden boxes, their sides beginning to steam and smoke under the lash of heat. My steel-reinforced boot heels skidded to a stop, giving the girl a once-over while my fingers stowed the whip.
Mousy brown hair? Check. Big blue eyes? Check. Mole high up on her right cheek? Check. We have a confirmed sighting. Thank God. Now to get her out of here.
Reagan Smith! Your mom sent me to find you!
Who are you? Leave me alone!
I grabbed her handcuffs. She tried to kick me.
Good girl. Bet you gave that asshole a run for his money.
I curled my fingers around the cuffs on either side. The scar on my right wrist ran with prickling heat, pumping strength into my hand. I gave a quick, short yank. She was hysterical and wiry strong. The roar of the fire would drown out any reassurance I might be able to offer her, and my long leather trench coat was beginning to smoke. I It was carrying plenty of ammo to make things interesting in here if it got hot enough. Not to mention the fact that the girl was only human. She would roast alive before I got really uncomfortable.
Move it, Jill. You promised her mother you'd bring her back if it was at all possible.
Promises like that are hell on hunters. I snapped a glance over my shoulder at the traitor lying cuffed on the floor. He appeared to be passed out. They're tricky fuckers. You don't negotiate a successful bargain with a hellbreed without being slippery. Of course, since I'd caught him, you could argue that his bargain hadn't been that successful. A heap of burning rubble fell down, smashing on the concrete and scattering. A lick of flame ran along an oily runnel in the floor, and the girl made things interesting by almost twisting free.
Damn it! I'm trying to help you!
The girl was almost insane with fear, fighting as if I was the enemy.
That said, it probably messes one's world up when one sees a woman in a long black leather coat beat the shit out of a traitor using a bullwhip, 3 clips of ammo, and the inhuman speed of the damned.
Silver charms tied in my long dark hair spat and crackled with blue sparks. Hot blood slicked several parts of me. And I'm sure I was wearing my mad face. I hefted the girl over my shoulder like a sack of potatoes and spent a few precious seconds glancing again at the motionless traitor. Burning bits of wood covered his smoking clothes. But I thought I saw a glimmer of eyes. She beat at my back with her fists. I sprinted down the long central aisle of the warehouse, hell-lit with garish flame. Fire twisted, stealing air and replacing it with toxic smoke. The scar, my souvenir from Santa Luz's biggest hellbreed, ran with sick, wet delight as I pulled force through it, my aura flaming into the visible, a star of spiky plasma light. I hit the hole in the wall, going almost full speed. The application of force made the landing much harder. Something snapped in my right leg. And the rest of my right side took the brunt of the blow, trying to shield the girl from impact. Concrete. Cold. The blasting heat of the fire as it devoured all the oxygen it could reach. The girl was still feebly trying to struggle free. It was a clear, cold night. The kind you only get in the desert. The stars would be bonfires of brilliant ice if not for the glare of Santa Luz's street lamps and the other lesser light of the burning warehouse. I lay for a few moments, lungs burning, eyes streaming, while my leg crunched with pain and the scar hummed with sick delight, a chill touching my spine as the bone set itself with swift jerks. My eyes rolled up in my head as the girl stopped trying to get away.
She'll be lucky to get out of this needing a few years of therapy and some smoke inhalation treatment. Here comes the cavalry. Thank God.
Unfortunately, thanking God wouldn't do much good. I was the responsible one here. If that traitor was still alive and the scene started swarming with vulnerable, only human emergency personnel...
Get up, Jill. Get up now.
My weary body obeyed.
Ugh.
I made it to my feet, wincing as my right tibia and my humerus both cracked, restructured themselves.
Get ready, Jill. You know what's coming.
With the flick of my hands, I had both guns unholstered and ready. The warehouse belched a torrent of red hot air, and the traitor barreled through the hole in the wall, flesh cracking black and his eyes shining flatly. The sick, sweet smell of seared human pork adding to the perfume of hellbreed contamination. I caught the bastard with a round to the chest and dropped the guns. I'm sure the fact that half his meat was cooked didn't help his mood. My hands closed around knife hilts. Knife fighting is my forte. It's close and dirty, which isn't fun when it comes to hellbreed or traitors. You don't want to get too close. But I've always had an edge in pure speed, being female and little and nasty, once Mikhail trained the flinching out of me. The scar helps too. The hard knot of corruption on the soft inside of my wrist ran with heavy, prickling iron. He launched himself at me as I moved faster than a human being had any right to, meeting the traitor. The idiot wasn't thinking. If he had been, he might have done something other than a stupid kamikaze stunt, throwing himself at a hunter who was armed and ready. As smart and slippery as traitors are, they never think they're going to be held to account. I stabbed. The knife went in with little resistance. Silver laid along the flat part of the blade as it parted flesh tainted by a hellbreed's touch. My wrist turned, twisting the blade. My other hand came up full of knife and the blade buried itself in his chest. I pushed him down, pinning him as the shine flared in his eyes. Roasted stink sweet filled my mouth and nose. I wrenched the first knife free and cut his throat. The flat light drained from his eyes. I didn't want to kill him. I wanted to question him and find out what hellbreed he'd made a bargain with.
You can't always get what you want.
I turned toward the girl. The thought of what he must have done to her, and what he'd probably planned on doing based on his other victims, drove my hand just as surely as the instinct of combat. The traitor's body began to stink, sphincters loosened by death. I'd almost decapitated him.
Hey, better safe than sorry.
The hell taint drifted up from the corpse, the body contorting in odd ways, as contagion spilled through its dying tissues, sucking the life from it. It was an eerie St. Vitus's dance, limbs twisting and jerking as they withered.
If traitors could see what happens after one of them bites it, maybe they'd think twice about making deals with Hellbreed. Or maybe not. Details, details, Jill. Get moving.
I turned on my steel-shod heel. The knives slipped into their sheaths, and I found my guns. The warehouse was burning merrily, and the girl lay crumpled on the pavement, barely getting in enough breath. She looked pretty bad, and would be terrifically bruised. But she was alive.
No!
She scrabbled away from my approach.
No!
I squatted, ignoring the flare of pain in my right calf, the bone finishing up its healing now that I'd stopped putting so much load on it. My coat, torn, ragged, and now scorched, dragged behind me like a dinosaur's tail.
Reagan, your mom sent me to get you. It's okay.
Stay away!
Regan cowered, hiding her eyes. I didn't blame her. If I was a civilian, I'd probably do the same. So I just stayed where I was, in an easy crouch, listening to the burning as the sirens drew closer.
Goddamn. I think I can count this one a win.
The precinct house on Alameda was still hopping. The graveyard shift hadn't gone home yet, and the late drunks were being wheeled in for processing. Montaigne was waiting for me in his office, looking a lot better than usual. No bags under his eyes, and a few inches slimmer.
Vacation did him some good. His tie's even on straight.
That meant a relaxing day. For him. Of course, it was still early. And he'd been yanked out of bed to come in and tie off the Regan Smith disappearance reappearance and sign the forms for what little remained of the traitor to be cremated. You don't bury them. You never know when a hellbreed will have a need for a nice, fresh-rotting zombie skeleton. Why give them one? I wasn't quite as well put together as Monty. I reeked of smoke and foulness. My back ached. And under the buckled leather cuff on my right wrist, the scar tingled and prickled like a wire whisk vibrating against the skin. Monty leaned back in his chair. A fresh bottle of Tums sat unopened on his desktop, next to his overflowing inbox.
Harvey Steiner. Mild-mannered accountant by day, whacked-out serial killer by night.
All he needed was a cape and spandex. And all it cost us was one lousy warehouse.
Yeah, plus four insurance claims that need to be filed for the cars you jumped on while chasing him. You're a menace to property, Kismet. How's the kid?
I shrugged. Monty's one of the few who don't have much trouble meeting my mismatched gaze. One brown eye, one blue. Somehow it just seems to disturb people on a very deep level when I stare them down. My fingers were at my throat, touching the carved chunk of ruby on its silver chain.
The girl will need therapy, but she's alive. Her mom's on the way down to pick her up after they finish with the rape kit and the sedation. Poor kid. At least she's still breathing. Quit second-guessing yourself and count it a win, Kismet.
How so?
I don't know. I'm not home enough to answer the phone. I talked to him a couple days ago. His mom's doing better.
Good.
Monty shifted uncomfortably in his chair, and I couldn't tell if he knew I was half-lying. Once wares get a particular lymphoma, they tend to go downhill quick. Bodies burning up from the inside. They call it the wasting. My back still hurt. A lead bar of pain buried in my lumbar muscles. I wanted to go home and scrub the smoke and fear off my skin. I wanted to check the messages and see if Saul had called again. I wanted to hear his voice. Spit it out, Montaigne.
I need your help on a case.
He looked down at the drift of paper covering his desk, and I began to feel uneasy. Normally, he says,
Jill, there's something I need you to take a look at.
Like he can't believe he's asking a woman half his size for help.
What the hell? I don't have anything else I'm doing tonight, other than visiting Galena and patrolling the streets for stray Arceus and other hell breed.
There weren't any leads to chase for tonight's trader. The breed who had given him the ability to fling fire was still out there, free as a bird. It didn't matter. I'd catch up with him, her, or it soon enough.
You don't get away with things like that. Not when Jill Kismet's on the job.
I dragged the only unburied chair over to his desk, pushing a stack of files out of the way with my boot. I settled down, resting against the straight wooden back, and fixed my eyes on the piles of paper. Talk to me. He opened up a drawer and set a bottle of Jack Daniels down.
Uh-oh.
I leaned forward, closing my fingers around the bottle.
A case? One of mine? If it is, why haven't you said something before now? It's the rules, Monty. You've done this before.
Marvin Kutchner. Cop. Ate his Glock about 2 months ago.
He tossed a folder across the desk. Has he come back? In my line of work, that's always a possibility. If you run up against the Nightside in Santa Luz, or really anywhere in my territory, which runs from Ridgefield to the southern edges of Santa Luz, Leon Budge and Via Horosas and I split some of the southern suburbs, you'll see me sooner or later. I will avenge you if you fall prey to things that go bump in the night.
And if you come back, I'll lay you to rest. Permanently.
Buried out at Estrada. No sign of him since.
So what's the deal?
I want you to look into it.
A cop suicide? No offense, Monty, but...
He was my partner back in the day.
What aren't you telling me, Monty? Is there a suspicion of homicide?
Something just don't smell right, Kismet. I don't know. I didn't think Marv was the type, though God knows any cop can be driven to it. It just don't smell right.
Why not just set IA on it?
Them? Look, Marv was a good cop. Maybe it got to be too much for him, maybe not. He had a wife. She's getting his pension, and if something... He was my partner.
Kutchner had pulled the very last disappearing trick anybody ever does. If it didn't look kosher to Monty, and he wanted to do right by the widow by having someone quietly look at it so the pension wasn't interrupted, it was reasonable.
More reasonable than a burning warehouse and a throat-cut traitor.
I leaned forward, holding out my right hand. The leather cuff on my wrist slid a little bit under my coat sleeve, over the scar. Monty's shoulders sagged as I took the file. It could have been relief, or a fresh burden. Vacations never last long enough.
I won't promise anything. It's not my type of case.
Thanks, Kiss. I mean it.
I rolled over, blinking hazily. I was just going to let the machine take it, but the thought that Saul might be calling when he knew I was probably home brought me up out of deep dreamlessness.
Hello?
My bed was rucked out of all recognition, blankets tossed everywhere and my clothes in a stinking pile on the floor next to the mattresses. I'd been too tired to shower when I got home mid-morning,
Just shucked off my clothes, putting a knife under the pillow, and passing out in the square of sunlight that travels through the skylight every day. If you're not nocturnal when you start out, being a hunter will make you that way before long. Afternoon is the best. A long, slow, sleepy time of safe daylight. Dusk will wake you up like gunfire, because darkness is when the night side comes out to play. Sunlight means safety, at least most of the time. The moment's worth of silence on the other end was all I needed to know that it wasn't my very favorite werecougar. Cold water ran down my spine, and the scar on my wrist ran with wet heat.
My darling kiss. It has been too long.
I knew he hadn't forgotten me.
It'd be nice if he would, wouldn't it, Jill?
My mouth turned dry and slick as desert glass, and the scar thundered under its leather hood. The buckles on the cuffs Saul made for me regularly snapped off or corroded, and I didn't help matters by tearing off the cuff when I needed the full extent of hell-tainted strength. I didn't move to sit up in bed. Perry would hear material moving, and know he'd gotten to me. Instead, I froze, lying on my belly, one hand under the pillow around the knife hilt, and the other clutching the phone to my numb ear. I'd wondered just how much chain he was going to give me before yanking. I'd left town 6 months ago in the aftermath of the Sorrows incident, and on my way out, I'd paid Perry a little visit. I knew he'd been in it up to his eyeballs, thinking he could play both sides of the fence and use the Sorrows to get his wormy little fingers inside my head. It hadn't worked. I'd spent a lot of time between then and now wondering when he was going to make his next move. The scar didn't twinge much, and it still functioned the same as before, feeding me enough etheric force to make me exponentially more dangerous.
It's not every hunter who has a tainted hellbreed mark. It saved my life more than once, and driven me right to the edge of the abyss.
Perry, didn't I tell you not to bother me?
Would you like my mark to start spreading, kiss?
I could almost see his blue eyes narrowing. Most of the damned are beautiful. Perry is just blandly mediocre looking. It's why he's so goddamn scary, and why my left hand started to quiver a little bit.
Or perhaps you would like it to start rotting and turning black. I believe the proper term is necrosis.
I know what necrosis is, Hellspawn.
That would put a little wrinkle in our bargain. And since you're already in Dutch by cavorting with the Sorrows not so long ago...
Oh, let's not fight. Come see me, kiss.
Hold your breath until I show up, Pericles. I rolled over and stared at the skylight. Late afternoon sunlight filled the plexiglass rectangle with gold. I was under the messy blankets, except for my bare foot, with the sheet wrapped around my ankle like a manacle. My toes flexed as sunlight scoured my vision, comfortable safety filling the inside of my skull with psychic white noise. I tuned my mind to a blank, meaningless hum, but my hands were shaking. One of them braced with a knife hilt. I was cold even under the blankets. The scar, under its shield of leather, ran with moist warmth. It wasn't much to look at. A puckered lip print as if someone had painted lye on the skin and kissed with a wet mouth. It still functioned the way it always had, feeding me with etheric force, hiking my physical strength and just generally making me a lot harder to kill. I hadn't been into the Monde Nuit to give Perry payment for that power since Saul and I returned from the Dakotas. I was all right with that. And technically, he had betrayed the bargain we'd made. I was within my rights never to darken the Monde's doorstep again. Never to make another payment, no matter how much power I pulled through it.
It's too easy.
Perry wasn't the sort to let a hunter slip through his immaculate fingers. He'd miscalculated badly last time, and I'd outwitted him. Hellbreed don't like that. Add to the fact that he'd done a few things I hadn't suspected he could, like producing hellfire in the blue spectrum. And you had a very unsettling situation developing.
Worry about it later, Jill. For right now, you need to get up and start poking around after Monty's dead partner. The sooner you get that looked into, the sooner you can get back to those disappearances on the east side of town. Four women gone, and the whole thing stinks.
The trouble was, I might have to wait until someone else disappeared before I was sure last night's player didn't have anything to do with the situation. But the fire-slinging son of a bitch hadn't bothered going out to the east. He'd concentrated slightly south of downtown, in the warehouses and freight yards near the river. Lots of places to hide where nobody could hear a woman scream. Regan Smith had been the lucky one. Her mother hadn't been able to look me in the face when she asked me to find her daughter, or when I left her outside the curtain to the ER bay her child was behind. Maybe it was my eyes. Maybe it was my long leather coat, or the skin-tight black t-shirt, or the silver tied in my hair. Maybe it was even the guns, or the bullwhip. Or maybe it was her raped, traumatized daughter whimpering even through the sedation. Sometimes people aren't prepared for their loved ones to be brought back hurt or marred. The disappearance itself throws everything off, screws everything up, and life is never normal again, even if their loved one comes back.
Perry's about to start messing with you again, Jill. It figures he'd wait until Saul is out of town.
I wanted to call Saul, but he would immediately be able to tell something was wrong. He didn't need another burden right now. He already sounded too worried. When he could get me on the phone, that is.
I should get up, work out, and hit the street.
I tried not to follow the inevitable chain of logic.
You know what this means. Perry's thinking about you.
I wished it didn't make me feel so unsteady. He'd almost gotten into my head more than once. Almost pushed me over that edge every hunter lives on. We commit murder on an almost daily basis. It doesn't matter if it's Hellbreed, Traitor, Scurf, Middleway Adepts, what have you. It's still killing sentient beings. The fact that most of these sentient beings are kill-crazy predators doesn't absolve a hunter of responsibility. The Church, after all, does not admit us into heaven, even if we're buried in hallowed ground.
Sometimes I wonder about that. I wonder more and more the longer I do this sort of work.
Getting that close to the edge is necessary. You can't kill a Hellbreed if you hesitate or flinch. But no matter how close you get to that edge, no matter how you put your little toesies on it and peer over into the howling abyss that lies beyond, you cannot go over. It's a razor-thin line, but you cannot ever go over it. I had been so close.
Get up, Jill. Work out and go out and do your job. Let Perry suck eggs in his little Hellbreed hole. When he pops back up, you'll deal with him.
It sounded good. I just wished I believed it. I rolled up out of bed, taking the knife with me, and got ready to face another night. I'd just given the Impala a tune-up, so my baby purred as I took her up into the suburbs, the red fuzzy dice Galena had given me dangling from the mirror. Kuchner's widow lived in the Cruzada district. Nice little houses from the 70s. Fenced yards and neighbors as old as Methuselah, on the right streets. On the wrong streets, the neighbors have bad crack problems that make them look like Methuselah.
Only in the burbs do you find this combination. No wonder they need sitcoms to dull the pain.
The wrong streets tend to cluster on higher ground, further away from the artery of the river, closer to the desert. Mrs. Kuchner lived on the edge, high enough up that the security bars on the windows were not just a fashion statement. Still, it was an okay neighborhood. And as the sun slid bloody below the rim of the mountains, I eyed the house, a neat little adobe with a trim, if weedy, yard, and a chain-link fence. Out here, the grass was yellow.
People have better things to spend their money on than astronomical water bills.
I leaned against the car door and examined the place. The right-hand neighbors had kids. Someone had to play with the toys scattered around their yard. On the other side, a scraggly green belt cut through the neighborhood, edging a ditch that would take runoff in flash flood season. The fence was higher on that side, and so were the weeds.
The blinds were all pulled behind blank windows and vertical iron security bars. The red-painted door looked like a tight-pursed mouth, and the high-arched windows gave the street a perpetually surprised glance. The brick-colored roof tiles were still fresh, not bleached by a few high-grade summer scorches. Now, why does this not look right? I pulled my sunglasses off as the sky turned indigo, pink, and orange, lingering in the west. The mountains glowed, furnace teeth spearing up to catch high, thin cumulus clouds. The original seven-veil dance performed nightly. Hold the applause, just throw cash. The wind coming off the desert smelled of sand and shimmering heat, oven warm, drying the sweat along my forehead and tinkling the charms knotted into my hair with red thread. My silver apprentice ring rested against my left ring finger. I played with it as I watched the house, hairs rising on my nape. My smart eye, the blue one, the one that can see below the surface of the world, watered a bit as I focused. A pall lay over Kushner's house. Etheric energy turned thick and bruise-clotted. There could be any number of reasons for this. Grief, or any strong negative emotion over time. A murder, or suicide in the recent past. This was listed as Kushner's last known address before he ventilated his own skull. But hellbreed contamination, or even just plain sorcery of the darker variety, will also congest the ether around a place, just like a bruise is congested blood. Kushner had been found in a flophouse hotel on the edge of the barrio. Still, brooding about suicide for a while, especially if you're serious enough to actually do it, can cause your house to get a bit stale, etherically speaking.
I don't know. That's an awful lot of static. Well, no time like the present to stick my nose in and find out.
I crossed the street, moving for the chain-link gate. A narrow strip of concrete unreeled to the steps leading to the entryway. My right hand crept for a gun.
Great, Jill. Show up at a widow's door and scare the crap out of her with a Glock shoved in her face. Marty said he wanted this quiet, you know?
Quiet's one thing, and disregarding your instincts is another. A hunter who ignores instinct is half dead already. The other half comes when you do something stupid.
Like not drawing when every nerve in your body screams something's behind door number one, sweetheart.
I kept the gun low along my side as I walked up the path past dead blossoms. My coat brushed my ankles as I stepped cautiously. The transition to nighttime taking a breath all along the edges of my city. Sometimes I feel that deep breath just after dusk, right under my sternum. It's like every instrument in an orchestra tuned to the same key and suddenly giving out the deepest tone it's capable of. The entryway held pots of cacti, different spiny little things that might have been flowering if they weren't desiccated enough to be used for tinder. Deep shadows at the end of the roofed entryway moved as I stepped forward, cautiously, and my sensitive nose picked out something it was all too familiar with. A ripe, overwhelming smell.
Oh, god damn!
Under my leather cuff, the scar pulsed hotly, but it didn't seem to be getting any bigger.
Stop thinking like that, Jill!
My entire body flushed hot, then cold. The wind was coming from behind me, or I would have noticed the smell earlier. The door swung back a few inches as the breeze pushed it. It's open.
Jesus.
Monty swiped at his forehead. Sweat sheened his face.
Jesus. Jesus!
Usually, we only get one Jesus out of him per crime scene. Jacinta Kushner's corpse hung from a white and blue striped nylon rope looped over an exposed ceiling beam. She wore a pale blue house dress and one slipper and had been dead for a while, if the state of the body was any indication. The air conditioning had been turned off sometime in the recent past, and the house was breathlessly hot and stale.
Not to mention reeking of decay.
I folded my arms, doing my best not to lean against the wall. The forensic techs were hard at work, gathering evidence, photographing,
trying to ignore the smell. A few of them had Vicks smeared on their upper lips. It was that bad. A few days in desert heat will dry a body out, but hot moisture in an enclosed house is bad for dead human tissue.
I don't like this.
I don't either.
One suicide is chance, two coincidence. I don't want a third.
The techs were giving me little sideways looks, except for plump brunette Piper. She was off maternity leave and slimming down again. My very favorite forensic tech, and my particular liaison with that department. Not much disturbs her serenity.
Maybe it's having kids that does it. I've never seen Piper even blanch. She's even been known to whistle Disney tunes, it seems.
This isn't my type of case, Monty. There's no smell of anything hinky on this one. Not extra human hinky, that is.
Yeah? Well, what about human hinky?
You don't want me to tell you anything you don't already know, Montaigne. You just want someone else to say it out loud.
What the hell did she stand on? She's only 5'3", recent stretching notwithstanding. And where's her other slipper? Not to mention, most women want to look pretty right before they take the plunge. They usually hang themselves in more private places, too.
I thought about that, too. God damn it!
Full night had folded around the house, darkness swirling in corners where it wasn't driven away by electric fixtures and portable lights brought in by the crime scene team. The shadows in the corners had weight, only seen through my blue eye. Seen from between, violent death has its own eddies and currents. She had suffered before passing out of this place and into whatever awaited her.
This isn't one of yours, Jill. Get going. There's other things out there tonight you should be taking care of.
But I made no move to leave beyond shifting my weight from one foot to the other.
What the hell are you doing here?
Carper looked irritable. He stood in the entryway, hunching his shoulders. His sharp blue eyes flicked once over the scene, taking everything in. In his sneakers and tweed jackets, Carp looks more like a college professor than a homicide deet. Out back, his partner Rosenfeld stood beside him, her spiky auburn halo throwing back what little light made it past the long mirror on the wall.
Relax, Carp. It's not one of mine.
Great. What are you doing then?
Conferring with Montaigne, if that's all right with you. Don't get snitty with me, Carp. I'm not in the mood.
Rosie ambled past her partner, bumping him with her shoulder. Her jaw would have done a prize fighter proud. The terrible two of the homicide department, appearing nightly on the scene.
Hi, Jill. What's going on?
Very few cops like being around me. The mandatory class I put all rookies through takes care of that. My tiger's eye rosary bumped my stomach as I shifted again.
Not much for me here. See you later, Monty.
I brushed close to Carp and almost enjoyed it when the man stepped away. He used to be able to get a rise out of me. Now Carper and I just go through the motions. It's a comforting routine on both sides. He rolled his eyes, and I grinned at him. The corner of his mouth twitched, and he looked away, the twinkle going out of his baby blues as he studied the shape of Jacinta Kutchner hanging, the edge of her robe fluttering a bit.
God damn.
Monty?
Yeah?
I'll be in touch. Then I was out the door, plunging into the night for the Impala. She stuck out like a sore thumb, having no flashing lights. And I noticed something else about the neighborhood. Jacinta Kutchner's neighbors didn't come out to see what the fuss was. At all.
So much for suburbia.
Gray pre-dawn was breaking again.
It's never a good sign when my phone rings and the beeper goes off simultaneously.
I tossed my dripping trench on the rack in the utility room and hobbled through the hall, through the cavern of the sparring space and the living room, every muscle I'd pulled singing its own separate note in the orchestra of pain. I'd broken my left arm this time. The Arceus I'd run across on the east side of town had put up a hell of a fight.
Get it, Jill? A hell of a fight?
Oh, I kill myself. But I'd found out, to my lasting satisfaction, which pile of hell-soaked waste had given the mad accountant his power. It was unmistakable, especially when an Arceus pulls a flame jet 6 feet long out of its mouth and tries to feed it to you. The scar provides me with faster healing and damage regeneration, but when it's busy splinting bones and replacing a few quarts of blood, pulled muscles heal more slowly. I didn't want to think about what would happen if it started spreading. Or if Perry decided it wasn't such a hot idea to have me drawing on a Hellbreed's tainted power if he wasn't getting anything in return.
Even if it was his own damn fault.
Hey, kitten. Guess you're out.
Hey! Sorry about that, Saul. God, it's good to hear you.
Hey, glad I caught you too, kitten. What's happening in the big bad city?
I miss you. And Perry called. Not much. A couple things Monty wants me to look into. A traitor.
Bad?
I shut my eyes, imagining Saul right next to me. Tall, dark-haired ware, looking like a romance novel Native American, except for the gold-green sheen off his eyes in certain light, the rods and cones reflecting differently. Nothing out of the ordinary. I even got a civilian out alive.
That's my girl.
How's your mom? I swallowed sudden dryness in my throat. Saul's mother hadn't been too happy to meet the Hellbreed-tainted hunter he'd given up his place in the tribe for. But with faultless ware courtesy, she'd accepted me into her home as a guest and cooked for me. She'd even introduced me to the extended family and officiated at the firelit ceremony that formalized everything. As far as Saul was concerned, we were formally mated. As far as his tribe was concerned, we were as good as married, even if I was, well, disappointing. But they hadn't said a word, just welcomed me with ware politeness. I wonder if they regret it now.
There's morphine. It's not bad. My aunts are here. They're singing to her.
Oh, Christ. She must be close to passing, and I can't make it better. If I could, I would. I'd hunt down the cancer and put a gun to its head, slit its throat, kill it for you. I love you.
I know that, kitten. You sure you're okay?
His mother was dying, and he was out there alone, because I couldn't leave the city. Nobody was around to take some of the load. The apprentices who had come out last time to handle the overflow while we were honeymooning had gone home and were needed desperately there. And he was asking if I was okay. I don't deserve you, Saul. I played with my pager, unclipping it from my belt. It was habit to take the damn thing with me everywhere, in a padded pocket except when I was hosing blood and stink out of my coat. Right as rain. Wish I could be there.
I wish so too. You be careful for me, you hear?
Always am. Do you need me? Say the word, Saul. I can't leave now, but I will if you ask me to.
I do. But I'm okay. They need you more. Well, I'd better go back in.
Okay, don't hang up. Perry called me, and I'm scared. Come home. You take care of yourself, fur boy.
You too. Tell everyone hello from me.
I will. He hated saying goodbye. So did I. My muscles were twitchy and sore under my torn, blood-stiff t-shirt. My pants were shredded. The Arceus had just missed my femoral artery in its dying desperation, brought to bay and made physical enough to fight at last. I lifted my pager. The number on it was familiar.
Montaigne.
You bellowed?
We got another disappearance on the east side. And there's something else. Can you come in?
I looked over, longingly, to the bed, with its rumpled pillow and tossed blankets. Saul was the domestic half of our partnership. I've never been good at that sort of shit. I'm on my way. The message light on the machine was blinking. I ignored it and bolted for the bathroom, another pair of leather pants, and quite possibly a sleepless day.
Monty laid the file down on his cluttered desk.
Michael Spillum. Vanished from a bus stop out near Percoa Park last night. We have a verified sighting at 10:15 when a co-worker drove by and saw him waiting for the bus due at 10:26. The driver on that route doesn't remember him. Says she wondered about that because he's a regular. His mother filed a missing persons when he didn't come home on time. Says it's not like him. It might be nothing, but it's in the same area as the other disappearances.
Percoa Park. A brief cold wave slid down my spine. We'd found bodies there before. That's a small window.
The bus might have been off by 5 minutes or so. Still, you're right.
If Monty hadn't had something else up his sleeve, he would have given me the location over the phone, and I'd already be there searching for clues. The other disappearances on the east side were all the same. People vanishing without a trace, outside, often in very short spaces of time. Small windows and disappearances are common enough. But this one smelled fishy to me.
It stinks of hell, actually. Or something unnatural.
I don't know. Everything about this fits except the gender of the victim.
Can you look at it?
That's the plan. Wanna tell me what's bothering you?
Well, I got autopsy reports on the widow.
And?
Hyoid crushed and damaged to the strap muscles, but no cervical vertebrae snapped and no rope burns. We're waiting for toxicology, but there was... She was... There was vaginal bruising and semen. We might get DNA.
Oh, Christ. So we're looking at a murder here, not a suicide.
Whoever set it up didn't work that hard. There was nothing for her to stand on to get up there. The rope was tied to the...
I saw the scene, Monty.
Her bedroom was torn apart. Looks like someone was looking for something, or maybe the attack started there. Carp and Rosie are betting on both. The screen in the master bathroom window was torn loose, but it's too small for anyone but a 5-year-old to shimmy through.
Who sleeps with their window open in that neighborhood, even with bars on the window? And why not tear up the rest of the house if they're looking for something?
The neighbors aren't worth jack shit. Nobody can remember anything out of the usual.
Monty, this isn't my type of case. There's no inhuman agency at work here. I've got those disappearances to look into and...
Jill, I never asked you for anything like this before. I told you, Marv was my partner.
I looked down at the file. Lots of people don't understand that about cops. The partner isn't quite a spouse, but they're the person whose head you think inside of, whose judgment and reactions you trust your life to. The person you spend so much time with, you might as well be twins. It may not be love, but it's close. It wasn't Monty's tender feelings that made me reach across the desk and tug the file out from under his hand. It was the vision of Jacinta Kutchner's body, gently swinging, just the tiniest bit, as her empty house breathed around her.
Hyoid crushed, vaginal bruising, bedroom ripped to shreds.
I'll look into it. Can't promise anything.
Thanks.
No problem. What are friends for, Monty? And if you've got one, you might as well use her. I'll check in.
Yeah. And try not to destroy any property, will you?
See ya, Monty. The plastic of the bus shelter's window walls was scarred and starred with breakage. I examined it minutely. Cigarette butts, an overflowing trash can, the smell of despair. Just like waiting for the bus anywhere, really. Dawn was coming up fast, the sky full of scarves dyed indigo, rose, streaks of gold, and soft threads of orange over the furnace in the east. There was a blank brick wall behind the bus shelter, and a drift of paper trash in an alley to the side. Across the street, Percoa Park simmered under a pall of early morning half-vapor, trees breathing in relief as the sun rose.
Michael Spillum, 34, college dropout, living with his mother and working in a shipping warehouse 4 blocks away from here. He'd be tired at the end of his shift, overtime wearing down his feet and shoulders.
So he'd probably stand here, leaning against the shelter's support post. A non-smoker, the file said, so he didn't light up while waiting. Probably just stared down the street, thinking a normal man's thoughts. I closed my eyes. I smelled exhaust, the odor of poverty and footsore wandering, trash and concrete. My head shot up as the street lamp to my left switched off. I glanced down the street to my right. Edges of broken glass glittered like diamonds as the star we all roll around lifted itself higher on the horizon. I left the shelter, cautiously. Intuition tingled and prickled down my spine, raised the fine hairs on my nape under the weight of silver-laden hair. My trench coat, still damp from hosing, fluttered. Time for a new coat. Hellbreed claws are death on leather. This lamp was busted, broken glass on the pavement. A star shape of expended force glittered, bits and pieces arranged along rays of reaction. Intuition turned chilly, raising prickles along the backs of my arms. The faint, distinct perfume evaporated as soon as I got a whiff. Corruption and sweetness like burned candy. Huh. I crouched easily, my boot heels digging into the pavement. My smart eye saw the strings under the surface of the world resonating to a powerful burst of bloodlust and fear. My dumb eye wasn't so dumb. Streaks and smears along the base of the street lamp gleamed. Blood dries fairly quick out in the desert. But this close to the misty park, it wasn't completely flaking off yet. There were transfer prints. Someone with bloody hands had clasped the bottom of the street lamp. Now that I was crouched down, I could see smears on the filthy sidewalk, too. Oddly pale. Pink instead of red.
Blood shouldn't look like that.
Shit!
I reached down to touch the smears on the post's concrete base.
Shit!
My fingers came away with powdery pink clinging to them. As I lifted my hand, I turned a little so the sunlight hit my skin. The powder vanished, little puffs of steam rising from my fingertips.
God damn shit-sucking son of a bitch! Motherfucking hell!
There's only one thing that dries blood to powder, evaporating in the sun. And as much as hunters hate, hunt, and loathe Hellbreed, there's only one thing that a hunter fears enough to cross herself and shiver. One thing that sends us looking for backup and polishing whatever weapons make us feel a little safer. I settled on my haunches, my right hand dropping to the butt of a gun.
Oh, shit.
I rose slowly to my feet and looked down at the long, jagged, wet-looking marks on the sidewalk. They pointed toward the mouth of an alley, yawning and shadowed even with the clear light of dawn coming up.
No time like the present, huh, Jill?
I headed for the alley. The next bus wasn't due for about 10 minutes, and the street was deserted. I eased a gun out with my right hand and a knife in my left.
Wish I had a flamethrower. Damn it!
The alley swallowed me with shadows you only get in the morning, knife-edged and clear, like stiff black paper cut into animal shapes. A dumpster loomed in the alley's throat. I sniffed cautiously, seeking that perfume of burnt sugar and weirdness.
I should have recognized that first off. God damn it!
My heart kicked up, high and wild in my throat, a bitter taste in the back of my mouth. Training clamped down on my hindbrain, regulating the cascade of adrenaline through my system. Too much, and I'd be a jittery mess. And if this turned ugly, I eased into the dark mall.
They're not going to be in the alley. Not with day coming on, Jill. But they dragged him back here. They might find something. Pray you don't find something.
I eased down the side that held a little more light, though the entire alley was shaded. The dumpster was full of garbage, and as a stray breeze touched my cold cheeks, the smell strengthened.
Oh, God, please.
I quelled the tremor in my hands by the simple expedient of putting it out of my mind.
Whatever's gonna happen is gonna happen. Nothing to be done about it now.
I stepped toward the dumpster. It was a big green number,
half its heavy plastic lid closed and the other half open, resting against the wall of the alley. At the end of the alley's confined space was a huge rolling door, probably for whoever took out the trash. I scanned the alley again. It was a blind hole. No place else to hide.
Don't let me find anything, God. Please. Cut me a break on this one.
I saw telltale frosting along the metal edge of the dumpster. Fine, powdery substance drifting in complicated whorls.
God's not in a good mood today, Jellybean. You've got a scurf infestation on your hands.
Scurf aren't like traitors or hellbreed. There's no pattern to their movements, no training, no instinctive predator's grace. They're just engines of messy hunger, ravenous and unpredictable.
And contagious!
The dumpster side was stove in and garbage spilled out into the alley. There were body-sized dents in the walls and blood everywhere. My blood, which just served to drive the thing into a feeding frenzy. They can smell it. And even though they like it fresh from the vein, so to speak, they'll lick it up from the concrete if they have to. Its claws tagged my ribs. He wasn't fully changed yet. The virus hadn't turned his bones all the way to flexible cartilage, or given him the thick, slimy coating that makes scurfs so slippery. But his eyes were blank, pale orbs without iris or pupil they don't need to see. And even though he was newly infected and didn't have the developed instincts for carnage, he was strong and desperate. When they're newly changed, they're even more unpredictable than usual. Foam splattered from its snapping mouth, rank and foul, burning the skin of my hand and smoking on my leather sleeve. The scurf took off, tumbling out into the street and a flood of early morning sunlight. Damage runneled the creature's face. Its blind, pupilless eyes popped, sending smears of buttery eye fat glistening down its gaunt cheeks. Thin, acrid smoke gushed, pale, powdery drifts rising from the thing that used to be Michael Spillam. The smell was gagging strong. The reason most hunters don't like cotton candy or caramel.
Burnt candy, sweetness and bad, all rolled up in one pretty package.
Foam splattered from its mouth in harsh droplets as I tackled it. It took every ounce of hellbreed strength I had to hold the thing down, even as its flesh began to run like plastic clay, stinking and smoking. I didn't let go.
Oh, Lord, take this soul into thy embrace!
And will you do it quickly, please?
Its throat collapsed into stinking sludge, powder lifting on the wind and sparkling in the sunlight. I struggled for purchase on the still-moving mass of almost liquid ooze.
Oh, keep it in the sun! Oh, God, Jill, keep it in the sun! For the love of Christ, don't let it go now!
The longer I fought, the bigger chance of a bite.
Shit!
I was bleeding from its claws, the gouges whittling deeper as acid in the powdery slime exhausted itself. The scar on my wrist throbbed. The dead body subsided, bubbling into powder. And I scraped both palms on the pavement as I backed away, hurriedly, staring at the smear.
Lucky. Jesus Christ, I'm lucky. No bites. I'm up to date on my garlic shots anyway, thank God.
I stared at the smear for a long time before holstering my left-hand gun.
Scurf. What next?
I had a lot of work to do, and not a lot of time to do it. Mickey's on Mayfair Hill is the type of restaurant locals like to keep to themselves. Good food, quiet atmosphere, and pictures of silent and classic film stars on the walls. I'm not used to being in Mickey's during daylight, unless it's just before dawn and I'm tired and bloody. Normally, I wouldn't go around civilians like that. But Mickey's isn't just the best restaurant on the hill, where the gay nightclubs rollick and roll all night long. It's also the only restaurant on the hill run by Wares. I didn't stop to be seated, just stalked through the tables. Very few of them occupied at this hour, and headed for the barroom. I took two steps down into the dark cavern where it was always dusk glinting off bottles and the jukebox in the corner,
and I caught Theron's eye. The tall, lanky, dark-haired wearer raised an eyebrow and cocked his head. I went behind the bar for once, without breaking stride, and a bleary-eyed businessman with the perfume of something unnatural hanging on him blinked, shifting uneasily on his stool. Mickey's is where the nightside comes to drink, and if you don't make trouble, you're welcome here. I snagged a bottle of vodka off the rack and headed for the back door. Theron followed, setting his towel down. We stepped out into the alley, where Amelia, one of the lionesses of the Norte Luz pride, leaned against the wall. She smirked when she saw me.
I guess I'm not in my finest form.
Jesus, Jill. What's wrong?
I opened the bottle. Disappearances on the east side of town. 4 women and a man. Probably more. I need everywhere in the city running sweeps. We got Scurf. Amelia paled and straightened. She was golden blonde, with a cat wear's characteristic dark eyes and wide cheekbones. Feathers knotted into her long honey hair fluttered as she pitched her cigarette into the butt can with a clean economy of motion. Muscle rippled in her bare arm, the sleeves torn off her Crux Shadows t-shirt. She shot Theron one eloquent look.
You're sure?
The lean, dark wear reached for the vodka. I surrendered it without demur. It was formulaic. I wouldn't be here unless I was sure. I pointed to my leg, where the leather was shredded. Underneath, the angry red of claw swipes was visible, with the trademark jagged curl at the end. I'm pretty goddamn sure, Theron. I need patrols running every inch of the city. I'm going home to call Leon right now.
How many did you tangle with?
Theron passed the vodka over to Amelia. She barely touched it to her mouth to be polite. Most lionesses are teetotalers. When they drink, they like to hunt. And not many men can keep up. Were or human. Just one. New one. Vanished last night. I found him this morning. Hadn't gotten all chewy and bendy yet. It was probably just a random infection. There was no sign of a nest. But there has to be one. And he would have found it tomorrow night. Ugh. Have everyone be on the lookout, and I'll drop by Galena's on my way home. She'll break out the emergency garlic.
I hate that.
Better than waking up slimy, Amelia. The east side of town, you say?
Yeah. There were disappearances, but nothing out of the ordinary. If you can call anything on the night side ordinary. Ugh, damn pager. I'll be digging for the entry point soon. There's gotta be more disappearances I haven't heard about.
Okay.
Put the vodka on my tab, fur boy. See you soon. I hit the street, up the slope of Mayfair to where I'd parked the Impala. Along the way, I stopped right outside the Episcopalian Church. All welcome, its sign said, with a rainbow arching over the words to drive the point home. I used the payphone on the corner.
Montaigne!
It's Jill. Listen, Monty.
Where the hell are you? There's another disappearance on the east side. This time, it's a cop.
Who?
A blue named Winchell. Just walked away from his cruiser. We found it locked on Rosales and 15th. He missed his 4 a.m. call-in.
I did a few swift mental calculations. That's pretty far away from Percoa. But again, in a shabby clutch of industrial buildings and rail yards. Plenty of dark little holes for Scurf to live in. If they have a range that big, we're looking at serious trouble. Keep everyone away from the scene. If you have people there, pull them back. Stay away and set up a cordon.
How big?
I don't know, Monty. Forget the cordon. I can't answer for anyone's safety down there. Pull everyone out. If he's still alive, I'll bring him to Mercy General. If he's still human, that is.
Jesus Christ, Jill, how bad is it?
You don't want to know. Nothing I can't handle. We'll see you around.
Jill!
What, Monty?
The widow. Do you have anything? Anything at all?
What do you expect? Miracles? Not yet, Monty. Just hang in there.
Jill!
I gotta go, Monty. Keep everyone out of the way, will you? Payphones are expensive these days, but nowhere near as expensive as replacing a cell phone, with as many times as I get shot, dumped in water, knifed, electrocuted, and thrown off buildings. Pagers are slightly less expensive,
and they're harder to break most of the time.
Leave a message.
Leon, it's Jill. We got Scurf. Anyone you can send will be welcome. Call me. I'm dropping by my house to pick up ammo, and yes, I'm up to date on my garlic. Hurry. I parked behind Winchell's Black and White on Rosales Avenue. Deserted in the middle of the day, all the scene needed was a lone tumbleweed mincing down the pavement to make it a cliché. The patrol car was parked neatly at the curb, tires turned out toward the street and doors locked. Its shadow cut knife-sharp toward the sidewalk. It was a little after noon. I could smell sand and the river, baking stone, and the effluvia of concrete canyons and human scrabble. I could also smell the mineral tang of hose water and a sharp whiff of cordite. Cordite? What the fuck? I approached the patrol car. No sweet taint of corruption. Nothing except baking automobile paint and the faint fading odor of a man's cheap cologne. I cast around. There was another shadowed alley, not 15 steps away. I skirted the car and headed for it, my right hand easing a gun out. Pulse pounding hard against the back of my throat, adrenaline boiled copper on my palate. The alley held nothing. Scraps of meaningless garbage all the way back. No place for even a scurf to hide. I slid out of the shade and into the hammer blow of southern sun again, testing the wind direction with my finger. I got another fading noseful of gunfire and something else. It was more a pheromone wash than a smell. Brittle copper fear and something invisible I'd smelled before. Damn it. Death.